The Weekly Connect on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello and welcome to The Weekly Connect. It's your place to check in with what's happening in the world of blind and partially sighted people, just like you and me. It's your place to share your stories in your own words. If it's something you talk about with your friends, then it's something you should be talking about here. Hello, I'm Stephen Scott and we are 9 whole days into 2017. Now, I'm just back from my holidays and haven't quite made it into this new year, new me mode yet, partly due to this cold I can't shift. But I hope that if anything can jolt me into some activity, whether it's good for the body or the soul, it will be this programme. And I hope it's the same for you as well. Coming up this week, we have Laura and Autumn in our Pause for Thought feature. What has she been up to since she took on her guide dog? Well, if I told you that, I'd kind of be ruining the surprise. But let's just say she gave herself the thrill of a lifetime and is determined to go back for more.
I was waiting to be scared, but I wasn't. I loved every single bit of it. It was amazing. I loved it.
RNIB's Stuart Curtis has a lovely day job arranging tickets for the RNIB's box at the Royal Albert Hall. But outside of the office, he turns out to be a bit of an adrenaline junkie. Who'd have thought it?
End up with stitches in my chin, but no reason to stop.
Oof, that might put me off, I have to admit. Padma, though, has taken up something a little less strenuous, but no less enjoyable. A
lot of blind people suffer from depression, so I thought it would be good holistically.
Ah, blind yoga, yeah. Something we do hear about on RNIB Connect Radio, 6:30s on weekday mornings. So if you're inspired, then do listen out there and join our instructors. So action-packed and full of ideas. That's what's coming up on The Weekly Connect today.
The Weekly Connect.
The Weekly Connect.
On RNIB Connect Radio.
So here we are again, 2017. Happy New Year to you. Hope you're well. Thank you for joining me, as always. And thank you to everyone who is coming up in the programme this week for sharing your stories. You know, that's what this is all about here at The Weekly Connect. It's the place where you come and tell your stories in your own words. And that is exactly where we start this week. We hear from three people now who really are experiencing all kinds of different things. And it all came about due to laziness, loneliness and interest. And that's the interesting part of where we begin here. Three very different pastimes, getting active and getting your brain active as well. Peter Bennett is on the line, as well as Liz Franklin and Maya Liam to join us and tell us about your stories. Hi, guys. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
Very welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Good to be here.
Yeah, and a happy new year to you all. Thanks for giving us your time. We want to talk about getting fit, getting healthy, staying active in the new year. It's something that, you know, it's so difficult for a lot of people to do, isn't it, when you think about it? You know, when you're getting into January, the January blues kick in. Nobody wants to do very much. But I think when you're blind or partially sighted, you often have that thing of, well, you know, what can I do? Can I go down the gym? Can I use the equipment there? Can I go out and do stuff? What will I do? And you three have all taken up different things that have got you into trying new experiences. And Peter, I want to start with you because you've kind of kicked it all off, really, because of Christmas, didn't you? You got into dancing, jive dancing, I believe.
Well, that's right. But this was 10 years ago. It's actually 10 years ago this week. I had, like many blind and partially sighted people, I was diagnosed with sight loss at age just 14. So living life through education and employment was very, very difficult, as everyone else, all your listeners will be aware. But there came a time where in the late 90s, I had two breakdowns and ended up retiring on ill health from work. And it was a case of, in 2001, what am I going to do to get myself fit and healthy again? And I was physically fit and improve my mental health as well. So I started off by joining a gym, first of all. But in 2007, in January 2007, I was kind of on the road back to good health, physical health, good mental health. And one thing that I'd always wanted to do was to learn to dance. I was one of these people that when I went to a disco or a wedding or something like that, I would be up on the dance floor just jiggling my stuff as everybody else does. And kind of thinking to myself, well, I'd like to be able to do this properly. So in 2006, December, Christmas time, I spent Christmas Day on my own. And I swore that day that I would never spend Christmas Day on my own ever again. So the beginning of January, I picked up the phone and I phoned around a few dance places and said, look, I'm registered blind. I would really like to learn to dance. But I'm absolutely petrified of taking that step to come and do it. And I spoke eventually to this dance teacher who said, well, Peter, we actually have a jive class and it starts tonight after the Christmas and New Year period. We have what we call taxi dancers. These are people who help out people who want to learn to dance. This is mainstream dance. This isn't specifically just for blind or partially sighted people. They said, we can give you one of these taxi dancers for the whole night who will stay with you and help you and support you and show you the moves that the teacher's teaching the rest of the class on stage. And we can do this every week until you feel confident enough to be able to just join in the class as any other sighted member of the class. And it was absolutely tremendous. So I took that huge step on that particular Wednesday evening at the beginning of January in 2007 and went along to the dance class. And 10 years on, 10 years this week, I've been dancing jive for the last 10 years. I'm really good at it now. And there's lots of people there from the opposite sex who want to dance with you, and you're encouraged to dance with as many people as possible. And, you know, I wouldn't be telling a lie if I was to say that quite often there's quite a queue of ladies waiting to ask me to go and strut my stuff with them on the dance floor.
Oh, Peter, listen, you're not hiding your light under a bushel there, are you?
No, I'm trying not to, no.
But not only that, you've married a dancer as well.
Well, yes. There's this woman joined the dance class, and she walked in, and I was on the dance floor at the time. And I have a bald head, and I shave it, and I moisturise it, and it's quite highly polished. And my wife actually, well, my wife now, this lady then, she walked in and she mistook the top of my head for the glitter ball in the dance hall. There were so many disco lights reflecting off the top of it that she thought to herself, there's actually something about this guy that stands out. I thought it was my highly polished moves that she was interested in, but it turns out it was my highly polished head. And,
that's a great story. And it really is. Thank you. It's an incredible story, but it's interesting to hear each of your stories, because Maya Liam, I mean, you know, you go out as well, and, you know, maybe not jive dancing, but you do go out and enjoy running, don't you?
Yes, I do, yeah. So I go running at least every couple of weeks on a Saturday morning with a guide runner who I now know quite well. I've been running with him a few times. And it's really good. I really enjoy it, because otherwise I wouldn't feel confident to go running on my own. The only downside of it is that we both obviously have to be available, and with weekends you can't always tell when you or the other person is going to be around. But it's good. I really, really enjoy it. And as Peter was saying, I think for physical health and for mental health as well, it can be a really, really beneficial thing. And I used to run when I was 16 with my PE teacher, funnily enough, who doubled up as my guide runner, and he was awesome and he got me into it. And then I stopped for a good few years from when I was about 17. And then last year I thought, why aren't I doing this again? I was registered blind before when I was running. I'm registered blind now. What's stopping me from getting out and doing it? And then I found out about Parkrun, which is a wicked organisation where they organise running for people of all abilities, all ages. It's a 5K every Saturday morning, completely free, run by volunteers, parks all over the country. And I think I read somewhere on Twitter there are 21 visually impaired people that run with guide runners at Parkrun, which is amazing. It's a really important initiative to support as well, and I'm all for supporting any charity that helps people.
But it's that thing, though, isn't it? It's that thing, though, that, you know, it doesn't really matter whether you're blind or not. We can all be lazy.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think because I was so nervous about doing it, I kind of put it off and put it off and put it off. And then now I've started, I haven't really looked back, and it's been really, really good.
But was it the nervousness? Was the nervousness about going out and doing it actually, you know, sticking on the gear and going out there, or was it because you've got a sight problem?
To be honest, I think a bit of both. I thought that, you know, everybody that was running it would be kind of amazing and really, really good, and I'd be at the back and blah, blah, blah. And that's a fear that everybody has, I think, whether they're blind or partially sighted or otherwise. But I think I was worried, obviously, when you run with a guide runner for the first time, there's always a bit of trepidation, because you're like, oh, is this going to work? Am I going to be guided in the right way? Are they going to get on with me? Am I going to get on with them? But actually, I went and ran with this particular guide runner that I run with, and it was just fantastic. I loved it. So I haven't really stopped. We email, and we say whenever we're available, and then we just go, and it's great, because it means that he's enabling me to do what I would be able to do if I was sighted on my own, but with someone else. And hey, you get a bit of a gossip out of it as well.
Yeah, exactly. but you also like doing weights, don't you?
I do, yeah, and that's something that I can do on my own, which is really, really good. So about 6 to 8 months ago, something like that, I was out shopping with my best friend, and he was like, oh, you know, you were talking about doing weight training. And I went, yes. And he went, you do know we're right in front of a weight training shop? And I went, I can't believe this. And I was a little bit annoyed, because I was like, you've brought me here. What are you going to make me do? In the nicest possible way, I adore him. And he took me in and said, oh, which ones do you want then? And I went, hey, hang on, this wasn't part of the deal. And he said, well, it is now. So, and he showed me some 3 kilogram weights, and the guys in the shop helped me out. The people there were really good. And then my best friend went, oh, they're neon orange, you know. And I went, they'll look quite cool in my bedroom. We'll have them. I can handle that. And again, I haven't really looked back. I've been doing that 3 or 4 times a week, put my music on. And it's something I can do by myself in between running or walking. You know, I walk everywhere as well. Yeah. Anywhere that I can walk, I will walk it. Although I did have quite a funny experience just the other day. I was going to the hairdresser's, which is a 20-minute walk, and I was like, Mum, I'm going to try and walk this. All right, then, see you later. Because I walk it on the way back, but I usually get a taxi there. It took me an hour and a half because I got so lost. So there are downsides.
Yeah, there are downsides.
But I mean, you know, it wasn't the end of the world, and I was able to ring my hairdresser, and we had a bit of a chat, and we saw the funny side of it once I eventually got to the salon and my hair was all done, so it was fine. But actually, I think it's running that's given me the confidence to do things like that, you know, to go out and go, okay, well, I'm a bit lost, but I'm in my local area, you know, I've got mates, and people generally are really helpful if you go up to them. And you know, I didn't have my cane out at the time because I thought it was a route that I knew very well, more for me, should have had it out, had it in my bag. But you know, if you say to people, I'm partially sighted, I need a bit of a hand, people do help you in whatever situation you're in. So you know, I think to anyone that wants to get out and do it, just get out and give it a go, because it's really exciting, and it's a really good thing to do, both physically and mentally.
You do 5Ks and you're trying to do them every couple of weeks. What's your record on that at the minute?
So my best time at the moment is about 37 minutes is my record time. But when I was 16 and I was training for kind of the mini marathon, because I did that a few times, I was running it in sort of 25 minutes to half an hour. So I'd like to get back to that if at all possible. And
I can barely catch a bus in that time.
Yeah, well, that's nice. No, I mean, I think you just have to kind of keep working at it. And I may not get back to as fast as I was, because I was a lot smaller and a lot faster then.
Mm. Interesting, because we've got Liz Franklin here as well. And Liz, your thing you've decided to do, you know, just something a bit different, perhaps something that, you know, gets away from the exercise theme for a moment, because, you know, you don't have to be running in January. I think that's the thing, isn't it? Everyone thinks you have to be out there pounding the streets or pounding a treadmill. You don't. You know, you can do something that exercises your mind, and that's what you've decided to do, and that's keep a diary in Italian.
yes, I've decided to do a diary in Italian because languages has always been my thing. I loved French when I did it way back in primary school. And I went on through school and did French and enjoyed it. And I subsequently did a degree in it and spent a year in Avignon as part of my course. But then I went into teaching and I taught French at night classes. And I was advised by my employer at the time that I would be better if I had another Latin-based language that I could teach. And purely and simply at the time, Spanish was the one that was available, so I learned Spanish and I got an A level in that. But I always thought I'd actually really like to have a go at Italian, because when I've actually heard it spoken, it's a lot clearer than French or Spanish. French and Spanish are quite mumbly languages, and certainly where French is concerned, there's a lot of words that have lots of silent letters, and it makes it more difficult to actually hear and comprehend what's been spoken to you. So I thought Italian would be much easier, because every sound is sounded clearly, and you can hear where the word boundaries are much more clearly, simply because of the phonetic sounds in Italian. And eventually, to cut a very long story short, I met the man of my dreams who wanted to travel the world with me, which is what I'd already been wanting to do anyway. But we went to Sicily, and we fell in love with Sicily. And although I'd learned a little bit of Italian before we went to Sicily, we really decided that Sicily was somewhere we wanted to go back to. So it made it worth my while actually learning Italian properly, not just sort of playing around with a few phrases, going in and ordering a cup of coffee. I wanted to be able to do more than that. So I did actually set about teaching myself. And one of the things that had been a constant frustration in earlier years was the lack of availability of information. And I never could really be really good at French or Spanish because there just wasn't information available. I didn't have any contacts in the countries, and the books in Braille are somewhat limited. You know, with the best will in the world, there just isn't enough of it to actually learn everything you want to learn. So then I just sort of discovered that there are actually loads and loads of websites out there where you can learn anything you want. And because I already had the knowledge of French and Spanish anyway and understood how they worked, and Italian's another Latin-based language, I was able then to set about teaching myself by just looking at stuff on the internet and finding exercises and finding grammar explanations and vocab lists and doing all that kind of thing. So I'd done all that and sort of built up a bit more of a vocabulary than just ordering cups of coffee and asking for directions. And I thought, well, I wonder what I could do with this that would kind of help me keep the language going and keep remembering the words. And I decided that this year I would keep a diary in Italian. I mean, I've kept diaries before and writing something that I'm passionate about. And I do like writing articles and stories and things. So I thought, well, this is just kind of another leap from there. So I have, right at the beginning of this year, I did start doing a daily diary in Italian. Now, it's not as it doesn't flow quite as well as it would if I was writing it in English, and I do have to keep referring to Google for what I think might be the best expression to say what I want to say.
Yeah.
And it might take me 2 hours to write about half a dozen sentences, but that is my plan for this year. That's how I intend to get better at Italian and keep a record of what I've done, really.
Well, I appreciate all of you giving us your thoughts and your experiences as well, and long may they continue. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Really interesting stuff. Thank you, guys. I really hope you've got some inspiration now. You know, what's so positive about Peter, Liz and Miley's stories is that they get so much, both physically and emotionally, out of their endeavours, which I guess is what a new resolution is all about, isn't it? That sense of accomplishment and succeeding in a task, no matter what the size of it is. Now, this next piece by Stuart is a monumental undertaking. His first outing on his bike led to a sense of freedom and a love of the open road, even if that road does sometimes come up to meet him more suddenly than he would like.
Hello, my name is Stuart Curtis, and I work for the Music Advisory Service at the RNIB. When you sit in the opticians, I can see the top letter on a good day. Probably an effective field of vision of about 6 to 8 feet, I would say. I volunteered to take part in a sponsored bike ride from London to Paris. And at that time, I didn't actually have a bike and hadn't ridden for quite a few years. And then the organisers cancelled it because they didn't have enough people to do the ride. And I'd already raised about £400 and no sponsored bike ride. So I was talking to some friends of mine and we organised ourselves a bike ride from Orpington over the South Downs to Battle and then around the Kent coast to Westminster. This was the actual day of the Battle of Hastings, when we were actually in battle. And we did it over a long weekend, Friday to Monday, about 270 miles, and raised about £2,500. It was tricky at first, but you soon pick it up, you know. I have about half a dozen people who I'm confident in following, so when they swerve to avoid potholes, I follow them, and not always successfully. There's a hill near Knockholt, and we used to cycle to the top of it, top off a pub, and then if you can imagine a sort of quiet country lane, fairly overgrown, zipping down there at 25, 30 miles an hour, just following people and hoping that you can break in time when they break. Can be a bit reckless. I've come off a couple of times. One time there was a brick in the middle of the road, which I didn't spot. And when the road runs out, you know, country lanes where the tarmac been washed away or something, hit one of those and I've come off, end up with stitches in my chin, but no reason to stop. I was on the New Forest and there's quite a bit of road there and it was empty. And I've got a speedometer on my bike. They opened up and got to about 45 miles an hour, I think, and then hit a cattle grade, but managed to stay on, so that was quite scary. Yeah, I need to get out there a bit more, you know. There are times of the year when it's just not safe because the sun's at that silly angle, sort of November time, and you just can't see what you're doing. And that applies to not just cycling, but this time of year when the sun goes down quite quickly and then it's night time and those things that are going to hurt you have got lights on. So if you happen to be at the back of a pack of cyclists and they've all got red lights on, you can kind of follow the swarm, and if they're all doing the same thing, then it's sensible to follow them. A bit like birds in flight, really, you know. I've got an amazing bike. It's a Trafusi. A friend of mine who owns a bike shop arranged it and chose the right wheels for the bike and modified it. I've done about 4,000 miles now. I think it's probably the sense of freedom, the exhilaration of taking your hands off the brakes and going downhill. It's just the excitement of the speed, I suppose.
Thanks for that, Stuart. Very interesting. As someone who used to enjoy a bit of cycling a few years back and can't do it anymore, I have to tell you it is something I really do miss. But tandem cycling is always an option, I guess. This is the Weekly Connect.
RNIB. Supporting people with sight loss.
Reading is essential to feeling included and independent, but when experiencing sight loss, gaining access to the same magazines and newspapers as your peers can be a challenge. RNIB Newsagent can remove those barriers. Whether you're interested in the daily papers, Reader's Digest or BBC Good Food, our service can deliver a wide range of popular titles in formats to suit you. Prices start from just £25 a year, and if you pay by direct debit, we'll give you a 20% discount. To find out more and request a copy of our new catalogue or sample magazine, please call RNIB's helpline on 0303 123 9999.
The Weekly Connect.
The Weekly Connect.
On RNIB Connect Radio.
Welcome back. This week we are talking all about health and fitness as we start a new year. Now, this is often about being physically active, isn't it? Especially important, of course, for us in the visually impaired community. because we have the lowest engagement in physical sports than any other group in the population. But it can also be about challenging your brain. Kieran and Firefly got in touch over Twitter to tell us that they are going to be doing a Braille course, something I'm looking to start as well. Hey, we should get together, guys. But for some, getting exercise is the chosen path. Simon Wheatcroft had a clever tip for Dave Carraher on how to stay on the treadmill. If you have light perception, use your phone as a torch. Genius. If not, start slow. Now, on the RNIB's Facebook page, Kelly Barton shares with us how she found a guide runner at Heart Local Park Run in Southport. Ken Reid shares his advice on how to get connected with guide runners across the country. Even in Scotland, there is nowhere to hide, even for me. Someone else who took to the gym was Mark Matthews when he decided to turn over a new leaf and engage a personal trainer.
I'm Mark Matthews. I'm 35 from Cardiff. I'm totally blind, which the cause of that is a rare genetic condition called Nari syndrome, and I've been totally blind from birth. At the end of 2013, I was, well, when we say grossly overweight, I was suffering from depression, and I really thought I had to do something about this. And I recall seeing on Facebook somebody who was, somebody who I was at school with. I noticed that he was a personal trainer. So I thought if I contacted him and tried to make some adjustments to my life, and training, I thought would be a definite benefit on the physical and mental well-being. We discussed my goals, which were at the time to lose weight, and then we start the program. And so far, it's gone really well. I wouldn't say we have any set goals. It's to become, generally fitter physically and from an emotional point of view. One thing I will say, though, is that I started off, I think when I first went, I was around 17 stone, and now I'm 15. So, 2 stone over the last 3 years, I think, is quite an achievement. I think the key to training is constantly keeping one's body tested, so you never do the same program, because your body will become accustomed to it, and it'll, no longer become challenging. So it could vary from weights to a CV, cardiovascular, i.e. that's treadmill, rower, just plain body weight exercises. And I suppose the rule of thumb is to never make one session the same. You always want to keep the body tested. If I can, keep on heading in the direction that I'm heading in terms of my personal fitness, being able to, maintain the commitment of going at least twice or sometimes even 3 times a week. I suppose, keep on heading in the direction that we're heading in. I don't think it's possible to overemphasize how much better I feel from an emotional point of view and also the physical. And obviously people, comment that I look fitter. I think, the satisfaction that one feels after completing a 45-minute workout, it's really hard to put into words, the fact that you've achieved something, and perhaps if you've managed to meet that goal, it really is hard to put into words.
An impressive undertaking there, and losing 2 stone is no mean feat. Well done, Mark, for keeping it up. This is the Weekly Connect. Now, as I mentioned earlier, the VI community is in real need of support to get into sport. So what better society of the week than VISPA in the Liverpool area? Well, they've not been going long, but are having terrific impact on the people they support. RNIB connector Danielle Colcombe spoke to George Ferguson about the initiative and his role in it.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is Danielle, and I'm part of the Connect team in the Northwest. I'm speaking today with George Ferguson, who is our activator at VISPA in Liverpool. Now, VISPA stands for Visually Impaired Sport and Physical Activities.
Hi, Danielle. Thank you.
Do you want to start by just telling us a little bit about what VISPA is?
Part of Liverpool City Council's physical activity and sport strategy is to engage VI communities to increase weekly activity. Participation amongst people with long-term illness, disability or infirmity is considerably lower than the population as a whole, DI being the lowest participation levels within sport and physical activity. Now, in 2015 November, we had discussions with Liverpool City Council to try and address the issues of participation rates with visually impaired communities. We came up with the suggestion of forming a collaborative working group of key visually impaired organisations within the Merseyside area to link them to the sporting world. Now, the organisations who form VISPA, it's Liverpool City Council with their Active Me programme, Merseyside Sports Partnership, the School Sports Partnership, Daisy Inclusive UK, who I'm an activator for, Action for Blind, Savvy North West, Greenbank Sports Academy, Everton Football Club in the community, and Liverpool Football Foundation. So you can well imagine trying to bring the VI community together with the sporting world can be quite a challenge, particularly if the sporting world doesn't really know how to engage the VI communities. And that's where we come in as a working group. We have direct connectivity to the visually impaired community through those key organisations who have sat down the VISPA table. Rather than saying, let's just upskill the national governing bodies of sport to be more inclusive of visually impaired people, we actually work with the VI communities logistically to get them to and from venues. We host like meet and greet sessions so it's easier for travel. So it's all encompassing really to make sure that confidence of visually impaired people is increased. Participation levels within sport and physical activity and awareness of those opportunities is also a challenge as well, but something that we look to address.
Why is it important to get the VI community active? And who is this mainly aimed at?
So it's the fundamental age group of youngsters who were born with sight loss, right the way through up to people who acquire a sight loss in later life. It's no good trying to get people more physically active when they're 16, 17, which is a key drop-off age anyway within sport and physical activity.
Yeah.
We need to challenge the youngsters who don't learn those fundamental skills. You make your sessions more inclusive. We'll bring the visually impaired people to them. And that's the idea of VISPA, really.
I'd like to ask you a few questions about how you got involved with VISPA and, you know, what do you get out of it yourself?
Well, I'm passionate about visually impaired sport. I've been visually impaired since I was born. I've got a twin brother who's exactly the same. My mother had sight loss, her dad did as well. So it was passed on through generations. From leaving school, we were introduced to the VI world of sport through Northern Sports, which was based in Manchester. Then we were involved at national level, playing for our country in a game called futsal, which is indoor five-a-side football. It's a fantastic achievement if you look at it from the outside, but for me, it just felt like I was playing sport. I've got a huge passion to give other people the opportunity to participate at their chosen level. It's not about playing for your country. It's about getting more active and having the opportunity to do that. A lot of people will tell us that they're not aware of the opportunities. That's heartbreaking sometimes. Mm-hmm. We've had some great success in the first 12 months of this project. We've held quite a number of taster sessions. We then followed them up with lessons and coach sessions. The success rate that we've had in the likes of golf and cricket and cycling. We've actually done an audit of all the fitness facilities within Liverpool as well to make sure that they're accessible for visually impaired people. We run a sight loss awareness and guide running workshop with England Athletics and Run England. We've hosted a goalball taster session, which we're looking to form a goalball club in Liverpool. We've done archery sessions for blind people as well. It's been absolutely fabulous, to be honest. It shows you how diverse the interest is as well. I mean, team sports, getting people more active within fitness classes, gym memberships.
Yeah. So, you know, George, I've got to ask, seeing as we're in January, we're all about New Year's resolutions at the moment. I just wondered if you had any tips on how to choose a suitable activity, but then most of all, how to get the most out of it.
Choose what it is that you're interested in. Link to VISPA if you need to. We're here to support anyone with a sight loss in Merseyside. Then we'll engage you with other visually impaired people or within inclusive environments with other people from mainstream environments as well. We'll meet at the local train station and all walk to the session together or get to the session in whatever way we do. Make sure that the session is a quality session, it's an enjoyable session, so we'll work with the national government bodies of sport to make sure their coaches are educated on how to work with visually impaired people. One of the biggest successes, and I failed to mention it a little bit earlier, is the visually impaired tennis that is off the ground now in Liverpool. which happens on a weekly basis now. And Liverpool City Council and the Tennis Foundation and Liverpool Tennis Centre have been fundamental in supporting us to deliver those sessions. They've been absolutely fantastic. They subsidise the sessions. They allow us to have one of their coaches, and the coach is absolutely fantastic there. That is the challenge, to make sure that the session's quality is enjoyable and people will go back, and people do go back. That's the key. Do something that you'll stick to because you'll enjoy doing it, not because you have to.
So there you go. The most important thing is to have fun, isn't it? And just enjoy it.
Definitely, definitely.
Well, thank you for talking to me. It's been a pleasure. I feel quite inspired to get out running again.
Thanks, Danielle.
Bye now.
Bye.
Well, what a truly mind-blowing range of things on offer there. So if you live in the Merseyside area, get in touch with them. We have all the details for George and Vispa, and we'll post them on RNIB's Facebook page so you can find something that suits you and get you signed up to a class. This is the Weekly Connect. Remember, if you want to get in touch with us anytime, do email. You can always get in touch by email, which is theweeklyconnect@rnib.org.uk. If there's something you want to really talk about, maybe there's an issue that's been bothering you, maybe over Christmas time you've thought about something and thought, I must tell those guys at the Weekly Connect. Well, get in touch, because this is your program. If you don't tell us about it, we just assume it's fine. Everything must be okay. What, transport? Ah, we know who has problems with transport. Ah, it's easy. You just jump on a bus. It's no problem at all. Oh, wait. No, there might be one or two issues there. Yeah, that kind of thing. Tell us about it. We'd love to hear from you. theweeklyconnect@rnib.org.uk. For some people, it's not just exercise. It's the spiritual connectivity that brings the real benefits to people. Let's hear from Padma now about her decision to take up a 5,000-year-old regime, yoga.
Hello, I'm Padma. I've been registered as blind for the past 20 years or so. Of late, recently, I was diagnosed with arthritis, and it was getting worse. I went for a physiotherapy, and the physiotherapist asked, why don't you start yoga? I thought that is a good idea.
Standing side twists. Come into a standing position with the feet a little wider than hip distance apart. Begin to swing the arms side to side. Let the head follow the movement of the torso.
It is difficult for a blind person to go to yoga classes for sighted people. So I thought, why don't we start yoga for the blind?
And begin to slow the action down in slow motion, coming back to stillness. Close the eyes and notice what you feel within your body.
A couple of friends also are interested. So I was looking for a teacher. And one of the technology for RNIB technology volunteers who comes to help me with computers now and again, he said he is a trained yoga teacher. I said, could you help us?
Notice how you are breathing and take several full breaths, relaxed, in and out.
When I find a yoga teacher for me, I would try and get other blind people interested in yoga. For benefits yoga has for health. Actually, yoga is good not only for physical health, but for mental health also. A lot of blind people suffer from depression, so I thought it would be good holistically.
Notice if the head feels centered, not turned to the left or the right.
I put an advert in the local talking newspaper, and several people responded. Couple of them, they were quite nervous about joining because they don't belong to any social group. And not only that, they have, apart from visual impairment, they have hearing impairment also. So when I told them, I myself suffer with dual sensory disability. So they will be in good company. I think that they gave them some encouragement and confidence. And I'm glad I got such people involved as well.
This may feel comfortable, or it may feel awkward in places. Notice how your body feels in this position.
Finding a venue was a bit of a challenge because it has to be accessible. I found a venue. Unfortunately, it takes only about 6 people, and I have more members interested. So I found another venue, which is not only it takes more people, up to 12, but also it is free of charge.
Bring your awareness to your arms and hands. Feel free to wiggle around until you find the balance left and right. Take a few more breaths, full and deep, before you release this position.
If we have more people interested, I'd like to look for an even larger venue. I hope I will have to do that, because it will be nice to get more people involved and enjoy the benefits of yoga, not only for physical but mental health also. That is our new project for the new year, 2017.
And just a reminder, if you want to get into yoga, then one way you can do it is by listening to RNIB Connect Radio weekdays from 6:30 in the morning. Get all exercised and stretched and, you know, whatever they do with yoga. You can get into that on RNIB Connect Radio, 6:30 weekdays.
Did you know that RNIB has a box at the world-famous Royal Albert Hall? If you're blind or partially sighted, you can apply for tickets and take a sighted friend or guide. Regular events include classics such as the annual BBC Proms concerts and Cirque du Soleil, as well as big-name artists such as Jules Holland. Tickets are subsidised and cost only £15. For oversubscribed events, RNIB hold a ballot. Listings for all Royal Albert Hall events are available from royalalberthall.com. For more details or to apply for tickets, email royalalberthall@rnib.org.uk or call RNIB on 0207 391 2063.
The Weekly Connect.
The Weekly Connect.
On RNIB Connect Radio.
This is the Weekly Connect, and it's our health and fitness special as we start off January. I don't know about you, but I'm feeling better just listening. Now, tenacity and grit is something our next guest has in spades. This is a man who went blind in his prime after an accident. That led to a total and utter revolution in his life. David Kuhn has not only completed the Ironman triathlon, plus four half Ironmans, run over 50 marathons, and done a cross-country race from California to New York City, he is running around the outside of the US to raise money for cystic fibrosis in aid of his granddaughter who has the illness. He spoke to us about how all of this started and what he gets out of it.
So I lost my eyesight from an accident with a drunk driver and at a small trucking company. So I had to give that up and had to give up driving and then turn to bicycling as a means of getting around. And eventually had to give up bicycling. That got to be a little unsafe, and so then I turned to running. The way that happened was I participated in a cross-country triathlon in 1999 from Santa Barbara, California to New York City, and that was a fundraiser for children with disabilities who were pursuing athletic goals. And they wanted adult athletes as role models for these children, where in fact for me, the children were my role models. So we literally biked, swam, and ran across the U.S., and I really hated running at that point, and I was hoping that they would completely forget about the running. That first 5 miles, I was the poster board of how to do it all wrong, and they suggested to run with my entire body loose. I still had enough eyesight where I could see other people, and I did not have to be tethered. I could run alongside of them. And so I refused to learn their way. The third morning, everything in my body hurt. And so they taught me how to relax my upper body as I ran. And so I did that. And at the end of that day, which was still 5 mile run, 90 mile bike ride, finishing with another 5 mile run, I actually felt pretty good. And the last 2 days, we ran back to back marathon distances. But we didn't run as though they were a marathon. We'd run, say, 7-8 miles, take a break, a few more miles, take a break. And that's how we got through it. And then when I returned home, I talked to my ophthalmologist, told him what I had just done. And he said that he ran the Chicago Marathon every year, and he's seen some blind people out there. And he says, why don't you register and run with me? I'll be your guide. So that was my first marathon. And then I took roughly 10 years off of running marathons or any organized events, but I would still get out and run just for the enjoyment of it. And that's what I found, is I actually found it to be relaxing, stress relieving. It was great for thinking through problems and Then in 2009, I was working as a center director, was a senior center, and we were doing a fundraiser, and I said, well, I run the Chicago Marathon. Everybody said, okay. And I thought, oh no, I can't believe I actually said that, because at that time, my eyesight had gotten to the point I was going to need a sighted guide. Someone got a piece of paper, and they put together a pledge sheet. So now I was really stuck. And so one of them said that there's a young guy that runs for his college, said he's sure that he would be my guide. I put off running with him because I was sure that running tethered, actually holding onto a rope, was just going to be awful. He was 4 inches taller than I am, so his legs were longer. You know, I could think of no good thing coming out of this. And so he just happened to be home from college one day, and we gave it a try, and it worked very easily. That college young man, though, he got injured. I had no guide. The only thing left to do was to contact my local running store and explain the situation. That man said, well, why don't you send me an email with everything you said? You're running this as a fundraiser, you're trained, you're ready to go, and let's see what happens. And I literally got over 200 people that offered to be my sighted running guide for the Chicago Marathon in 2009. And that pretty much set the tempo. So I got into running, ran the Chicago Marathon in 2011 and 12 and 13 and qualified for Boston. And then in 2014, that's when I started running for my granddaughter across the U.S. She has cystic fibrosis. We set up a website very quickly, set up the Facebook page, and we thought, well, maybe the first thing to do is to send emails out to the various running clubs in Seattle, Washington, and see if I can get sighted running guides. And within 30 minutes, we got an email back from a guy who said, I have a daughter who is visually impaired, and I do a lot of fundraising for the Cystic Fibrosis Foundation. What do you need? You got it. Bingo. And we were off and running. He set it up with his running club that they were going to guide me for 50 miles, 25 miles a day. But we weren't going to be able to find guides for the rest of the way. So, again, we're just doing this thing on the fly, not even sure what we're doing. And so I flew out to Seattle. This gentleman met me, put my gear in, his car, and then we ran 25 miles. Someone picked him up. And the next morning, somebody else picked me up, and we ran 25 miles. When people were available to guide me, they could guide me. When they weren't, I'd run on a track. In Spokane, they have the largest running club in the U.S. And of all places, I was not able to connect except for a group of women. And one of them starts talking on a cell phone, and she says, well, I'll ask him. She said, I have someone on the phone here that would like to run with you tomorrow, but here's the thing. They run in costume. And she says, so if you'd like to do this, you can't tell anybody. And I said, okay, let's do it. The next day was prom day then. And so the two women were dressed in prom dresses, complete with some pretty gaudy jewelry, I am told. And for me, they found a tuxedo. And so that's how we ran. And we ran, I don't know how many miles, but in costume. And that's what we encountered as I came across the U.S. People were just incredibly supportive and friendly. And it was just amazing. It was brutal on my body. But the people were incredible everywhere I went. My goal is to complete it. Even at my tender age of 64, I want to run all the way around the perimeter states of the United States for my granddaughter and other people with cystic fibrosis, you know, just to raise awareness about the disease and, you know, raise money for it. If I did not lose my eyesight, I would never have gotten into running or triathlons, and definitely, I would never have done the cross-country triathlon in 1999, and that's what led to one thing after another, knowing that I could do a cross-country event to do the run for my granddaughter. It wasn't like this is only a dream that could never happen. I've done it. And with the 50-plus marathons that I've run, I would have never have done that. And the guides that I have are just some of the most amazing people. I've run in 17 states in the U.S. I've met so many other blind and visually impaired people. that are runners themselves. It's just a phenomenal group of people of all levels and all skills. And I really am the little dog in this pack of amazing athletes. And I just feel so blessed to be a part of this. Otherwise, you know, I would just be just somebody who might read about it someplace. Maybe I pick up the newspaper one day. Maybe there's something about a blind runner. And I think, oh, cool. These people that are guides, you know, they're so selfless. They're there. They just love doing this. And the first time I was, quote unquote, forced to have a guide, I really looked at it as though I'm asking somebody to give up their marathon for me. And, you know, 200 people responded through the internet, plus our phone. We have an answering machine. That thing was loaded for days. And that started teaching me that, you know, I was looking at this all wrong. I came from the sighted world. That's how I was looking at it. Now that I'm in this world, I see it differently, that there are people out there that are incredibly generous and just want to give so much that they get out of it more than they give. We may not get back exactly what we put in or what we think we're going to get back, but we get something back. And that's what the relationship is between myself and my guides. It's a mutually giving relationship. And so when I run with people, I always try to be relaxed and fun and make it that for them. I'm very thankful and just in awe over, living this life.
You know how I hate to use that word inspirational. Well, I think I might have to make an exception here. What a humble and selfless man David is. His story was just so amazing. It's just a shame we couldn't play you all of it. He even trained with Evel Knievel's grandson. So he's a hero in my book, that's for sure. Now, if you don't have a head for heights, then get yourself a seat and prepare to feel a little green around the gills as this week's Pause for Thought takes us up, up and away. Here's Laura and her guide dog, Amber.
My name is Laura Bradley. I have had my guide dog Autumn since February last year. The reason that I decided that a guide dog was for me was because I've had a condition called retinitis pigmentosa, RP, since I was a wee girl. But as a wee girl, I went to a mainstream school. I had a normal upbringing. My eyesight wasn't as good as everyone else's, but it was okay. It then deteriorated as I got older, and I was registered blind in 2006. And it was not until maybe 2 years ago when I had graduated from university, and my eyesight deteriorated further, which resulted in me becoming kind of withdrawn. I was really anxious going out the house. I got quite depressed. I wouldn't go out the house with either one of my friends or my mum or my dad, even to the local shop, which is over 2 minutes from my house. I was just so unable to accept my sight. And it was one day, 2014, at Christmas time, and I was watching Tech Santa. One of the charities that they'd chosen that year was Guide Dogs. And I was watching the kind of clips of people with their guide dog owners with their guide dogs. And I was just thinking, wow, that's amazing. And as I continued to watch it, I just had a kind of really nice feeling in my belly, and I thought that would actually really help me. And when I told my family, they were just delighted. Autumn is just absolutely amazing. I can go out, I can wake up in the morning and I've got no worry, nothing. About going out myself, and now I can go everywhere. Anywhere I want to go by myself, I can go to the supermarket, go to the gym, I go into Glasgow City Centre, which is really busy. I can go on trains, buses, and I don't worry, because I know that 100% I can trust her and she'll look after me. She's got a wee kind of bad habit, Autumn does. If she finds any kind of foxes poo, she tends to kind of roll in it and absolutely loves it. You would think that she was having a really nice bubble bath, but it's not, and it's her version, and she absolutely loves it. And I've had to actually bring her home, and she's covered, and I've had to put her in the bath. She looks like a butter in the mail. She's like a wee angel, but when it comes to things like that, she's a wee minx. The guide dog owner's choice whether they would like to kind of do fundraising for guide dogs, and I was really keen to do it. So So I was thinking I would like to do something to kind of some event for myself. I'd always wanted to do a skydive. I'd kind of been thinking about it for a few years, and I thought, well, why? But better than to do it for guide dogs and kind of raise some money for them. So that's when I kind of thought, well, Laura's skydive for autumn. And I thought, it's obviously a guide dog called Autumn, and I could do it in autumn, which I did. I'd done it in October. And then I decided, well, I enjoyed the skydive so much that I thought, well, I could be a kind of yearly thing. I could think of something new to do every year. And that's how I've kind of thought this year. I'm kind of looking into doing a wing walk, hopefully. On the day of the skydive, I was kind of waiting for the fear to kick in, but it never did. Even get up in the wee tiny plane, it didn't even have a door. I was waiting to be scared, but I wasn't. I loved every single bit of it. And the bonus was obviously raising money as well, but it was amazing. I loved it. The free fall lasts for 30 seconds, and you think, oh, that 30 seconds is actually really long. But the way it kind of works, I'm harnessed onto the instructor. My instructor was called Mark. When we reach the altitude, which was 10,000 feet, I'm kind of sitting on his knee, and he moves towards the door. So he's kind of holding on to two bars at each side of where the door would be, and I'm already out the plane, because in the training you've got to leave the plane in a certain way. Your hands are crossed over your chest, and your feet are kind of crossed under the plane, and then Mark kind of does the countdown. And then my first initial thought was, "Huh, I've just jumped out of a plane." I can't explain what it felt like. The adrenaline was crazy. Mark, he's done over 1,000 skydives, and he said he can't even explain what the feeling's like. It's really strange, but it's good. It's a good feeling. I remember it being really loud, obviously because of the wind and the kind of rate you're falling. But it was really amazing. It was great.
A wing walk. Good luck to you, Laura. I'm sure your fundraising will take off into the stratosphere with that adventure. Well, I hope you're feeling fit and healthy after listening to that lot. Don't forget to check out the RNIB's Facebook page for details of all the organisations in today's The Weekly Connect. And do remember to get in touch with us about how your resolutions are going. Yeah, remember those you said you were going to do? Mm-hmm. How's it going then? We're about a week or two in. Well, if there's anything else you'd like to cover on the show, maybe you don't want to talk about resolutions anymore, then don't forget you can take part in the very programme. You can connect with us at the email address theweeklyconnect@rnib.org.uk. You can tweet us using hashtag TheWeeklyConnect, or you can post on the RNIB's Facebook page with your views and opinions. Next week, we'll be looking at blind parenting. Why? Because, well, it's an interesting topic. A lot of you interested in this, and a lot of you are going to be telling us your stories on blind parenting, hints and tips and such like. Also, Laura, one of our producers, is off on her maternity leave. So best of luck to you, and do keep us posted with news of your new bundle. Nothing else left for me to say, though, except Happy New Year. Thank you for staying with The Weekly Connect.